Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Judah Sanders.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On this episode, we welcome some new parents to talk about babies and what it's like to be a new parent, what they understand about themselves and God differently as a result of this new life change. We're going to talk about communication, something all of us do all of the time and that we all need to get better at, and how we can avoid toxic communication patterns. And we're going to look at what the Apostle Paul has to teach us for how we can love one another in a time of polarization, even when that polarization comes to church. All of that and more on this episode of Engaging Culture. Well, Pastor Judah, here we are, another episode of Engaging Culture, and let's just get to it. We got a busy slate today. So tell me, what is the best thing you saw this week?
Yeah, so this past weekend was my grandfather's celebration of life, and it really was a celebration of life. It was a festival. It was outside. There was like a gallery walk where you could like see like kind of his life story in like these kind of tangible ways. There were drummers and dancers and food, and it was like from like 11 a.m. to like 5 p.m. And it was just beautiful. And I thought, like, one, I just want to acknowledge that we had the luxury of just that my grandfather was old, had lived a long life. You know, it was not, it was as untraumatic, I suppose, as death can be.
It's like sad, but not tragic, maybe.
Yeah,
would that be appropriate?
You know, like you kind of are holding that. So I acknowledge that that allowed us perhaps to have more room for that kind of joy. But I just thought, man, if we can celebrate our folks who transitioned just with like love and laughter and joy, that's a really cool way to be able to do that. So that was the best thing I saw.
Love it. My best thing was I got to go on our men's retreat this last weekend, which was the first time we've done a just Bridgeway men's retreat in a long time. We'd partnered with kind of a multi-church organization for a while, and it was just amazing. We had 125 guys show up, and Pastor Lance preached, and we had Pastor Dylan and Rayon there leading worship. And our men's team, like our volunteer team, they just owned it. They owned the entire weekend and just did a phenomenal job. And I really enjoyed it. It was a cool spot, Camp Del Oro, a place I didn't even know existed up above kind of Nevada City. Beautiful facility. I got to play pickup basketball for the first time in like forever and didn't get hurt. So that was pretty exciting. And it was just a beautiful place. Had a really fun time connecting with a lot of dudes who I already know and then making connections with some guys I didn't. So it was just, it was a great weekend, and I'm incredibly proud of all of our team. And
shout out to those fellas. And how can folks get involved with men's ministry?
So the men's ministry page on our website, we got groups going all the time you can jump into. I think our next event's not coming up until January with our annual steak dinner, but we got men's groups for you. So, or you can just email me, bkiley@bridgeway.church. We'll get you connected.
If they need a speaker for the steak dinner.
For the steak dinner?
Steak,
you're available for that one?
Okay, for the steak, the steak dinner.
You know you can come and just eat the steak without speaking.
The steak,
right?
Never mind. I'll cook that day, but I'll stop by.
But you'll stop by.
Put me on a plate to the side.
We'll be right back. So for our first segment, we are delighted to welcome three members of the Bridgeway staff who are also new parents to the studio. We have Pastor Cliff, who is our high school pastor. We have Maddie, who is our events assistant and cafe manager. And then Kristen, who works in HR and finance. She's our HR and finance associate. All of them are awake enough to be with us despite having babies well under 1 year old. So we appreciate you guys being here and just want to have a conversation about life as new parents, how you're seeing God in the midst of that, and what it's been like. So first question, we'll go to you first, Maddie. What is something that has surprised you as a new parent?
I think the main thing that has surprised me has been the brain chemistry feels completely altered.
Like, oh, does it now?
Yeah. Like mom brain, pregnant brain was one thing. Mom brain is like a whole nother world. I feel like a different person. And it's not something that like I can actually describe. Like I genuinely want to remember the things and I write it down and I do all the stuff to try and like maintain memory of, you know, daily events. But it surprised me exactly how much I have to work to remember my daily things. So
stuff you kind of took for granted before.
For
you're
sure.
Now like, okay, this is a lot.
Yeah.
Kristen, I'm guessing you could probably relate to that a little bit.
A little, yeah. I mean, I left my wallet to go grocery shopping the other day. It was in the diaper bag and I got, you know, 30 whole minutes to myself, which felt magical. And I got to the grocery store and I got to check out and I had no wallet. And that's just something you have to chalk up to. Your whole life is different. You don't think about yourself anymore. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about a whole other person.
Yep.
So those little things like, you know, forgetting your wallet or, you know, anything like that. It's just different.
So there's the mom brain aspect.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything else in particular that stands out in terms of something that has surprised you about being a new parent?
I guess something that really, for me, it's just how different everything is and how much things have changed, but how quickly you assimilate that change to your life.
Totally.
Like how quickly you adjust. There's really no you know, there's no time and there's no taking it. It's not like you can take it back. You know, you just kind of have to roll with the punches and adjust. And how quickly you forget your past life and how this becomes your new reality.
Well, and I feel like parenting, truly nothing can fully prepare you for it, right?
Correct.
You can read the book, take some classes, listen to advice from other folks, mm-hmm. but there's just nothing like being in it. And then I think to your point, Kristen, it's crazy how all of a sudden, like, life pre-kids, mm-hmm. it's almost like it's not even you. It's like a whole nother existence.
Yes, yes. And I was going to touch on that of, like, mm-hmm. your whole world changes, but it's almost like this child's been in your life forever, especially as a first-time parent. Mm-hmm. It's like she's been here all along, and mm-hmm. she's just only added joy, you know? And, like, you start out feeling really incompetent. Like, what am I doing? Like, how am I supposed to keep this baby alive? But quite frankly, you figure it out, and mm-hmm. the Lord supports you, and I think that's been the biggest...
100%. I completely agree. We went to dinner for my husband's birthday and it was, you know,
so simple.
It was simple. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we think thankfully have such a big community and we have so many hands who love our daughter and who are willing to, you know, allow us that time where, you know, because it's very easy to forget about, you know, each other. So we sat there and as hard as we tried not to talk about the baby, that's all we talked about was the baby.
Yep, top of mind.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah, no, definitely. That makes sense.
So Pastor Cliff, being a new dad has got some impacts as well. And I'm curious how it has impacted your understanding of yourself.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about being a parent is so much of your own insecurities and your struggles, you see so much more vividly now because of my own insecurities. Like I sometimes project it onto my kid and I see those and I'm like, whoa, hold on. I thought I figured this out. I thought I figured out my insecurities a little bit. I thought I figured out, you know, all the things that I'm struggling with. But no, I'm seeing in those moments where he's crying at 3 a.m. or I'm trying to console him and he's just screaming and I'm not mom and all he wants is mom, you know. But also through that, the Lord has really given me grace for myself, grace for him, grace for my wife. And it's been really cool to see the capacity that I have now, not because I've done something great, but just because the Lord has given me a capacity to deal with all these things. Last night, you know, my kid was waking up every hour and a half.
Wow.
I'm here today and I feel like I can do all the things I need to do. Yeah, I'm tired, but the Lord has given me a brand new, like, just ability to do many things that I thought I could never do.
Special shots on me after we finish recording.
Yeah.
Wow. What about you, Maddie? How has this impacted how you're thinking about yourself and what you understand about yourself?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, realization that I received once bringing her home and trying to take care of her was the selfishness kind of had to be rooted out.
Yeah.
I couldn't think for myself and it's hard. It's finding the balance, right? Because I obviously have to take, as a mom breastfeeding my child, I have to take care of myself and make sure that I'm hydrated and fed and all of that. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like a new understanding of my dependency on the Lord too, right? And, you know, there was those newborn 3 a.m. cry sessions where, again, couldn't console her.
Yep.
And you're just doing you can, everything you can. And I was so done. I was emotional. I was tired. I just really wanted sleep. I was so sleep deprived. Yep. And I just said, Jesus would do it for me. Like, I had to remind myself that he has done it for me. He has been there in my lowest moments in my dependency and held me and consoled me and did all those things. And so I think it just gave me a heightened sense of, like, wow, how much I really do need the Lord in order to be a good mother and take on this role.
Yeah, and that dependency on the Lord, I think, is really crucial for us to accomplish what we need to accomplish
absolutely.
As parents.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't be able to do it without the Lord.
Yeah, so, not even for a second.
No way. No way.
So my next question, and we'll start with you on this, Cliff. Certainly you have a unique perspective as a dad, as Pastor Judah mentioned. Yep. But what is one thing that you wish you had known before becoming a parent that you've now kind of learned or realized?
Yeah, there's one thing that we all have expectations, even if we think we do or don't. Totally. Like, we all have expectations. But one thing I didn't expect, I wish I would have prepared for, is I thought I would instantly connect with my child after he was born. I was his dad. I am his dad.
Yeah.
He looks like me. He came out of the womb looking just like me. If you put a baby picture of me and a baby picture of Ford, literally the same person.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel super connected to him. He was a little thing who cried in my arms and just wanted mama. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, he's 5 months old now, almost six, and that's still the same story. And so, yes, there's plenty of times where we laugh and we connect and whatnot, but I did not think that it would take me so long to feel connected to him, mm-hmm. Which meant I had to really put some extra effort in as far as helping out with my wife and what she needed for him and what he needed from me and all those types of things, because I was like, well, man, this kid just screamed. Like, how am I supposed to connect with a screaming little thing?
Piece of cake.
Yeah, so that's something I wish I would have known.
Well, and I think there is a interesting element of being a father that, maybe does not get talked about as much, but that is absolutely been my experience. And it's funny, even now, like, my kids are 13 and 11, both boys, and the more emotional connection has always been with my wife from when they were Ford's age to now. Like, when they come in to snuggle, it's not with me, right? And it never really has been, right? But at the same time, I think to then recognize that, hey, when we're going to do something fun, like, not to say my wife isn't fun, but, like, I'm the one who takes them to do stuff. Yeah. I'm the one who we practice sports together. We watch games together. We do those kinds of things. And I even reflect on my own life a little bit to go, okay, those first, like, 13, 14 years of my life, kind of mom was the default, and then it shifted. Now, that's one thing to say that as a, I've got a son who I'm very, very close with who's already 13. It's another thing to say, well, Cliff, you just wait. In 15 years, Ford's going to be all about you. But I think there's a space for us as dads to go, okay, this is my role in this time.
Yeah,
and there's just something something just kind of normal about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So how about you, Kristen? I know it sounds like your husband has had kind of a similar experience.
My husband feels the exact same way. He, the other day, Tatum was screaming and screaming and screaming, and I'm making dinner and he's doing his best, and I take her, he hands her back to me, and he goes, I feel like she doesn't like me.
Yep.
And I said, she's 3 months old. She doesn't know what she likes.
She's unaware of her own existence.
She's completely unaware. Yeah. So super fair. I mean, I think it's hard because all they want is their mom. They were a part of you for 9 months. It's supernatural. I mean, there's a study that says that, for the first 6 months, they feel like they are still attached to you.
Yeah.
So it's completely normal. But as a wife and a mom, you have to validate your husband's feelings. Yeah. I mean, that's a valid feeling. It's just as much his child.
Yeah.
And I think, he sat back and he was so doting and he, waited for her just as long as I waited for her. Mm-hmm. So, I can imagine why that would hurt your feelings, not being able to connect
quite on that level. How about you? What's one thing that you wish you had known beforehand?
That you really will never sleep again.
Yep.
And you just kind of have to be okay with it. I remember asking my mom, I was like, so when did you start sleeping again? She's like, I haven't slept in, 30 plus years. She's like, how old are you? And so your life is different. Your time is not your own. And you have to learn to find joy in those 3 a.m. bottle sessions, because it is really, really you're exhausted, but they look up at you and it's like all of that melts away.
I want to be mad, but
I want to go back to sleep, but you're pretty cute. Yeah.
There's a reason why God makes them so cute.
Oh, right? 100%. Right. 100%.
Well, I am from the future and I'm here to tell you that while parenting challenges abound, the 3 a.m. wake ups will become less frequent.
Ugh. Praise the Lord for that.
Yes.
So what about you, Maddie? What's one thing you wish you would have known before?
Yeah, that's a hard one because I think people say it all the time, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Sure.
Until you become a parent. But I think one of the things I wish I had known prior is that communication is such a big thing postpartum. What I wish I had known was how to communicate my needs well and how to communicate that with my husband.
Yeah.
We had the privilege of having a long maternity leave, and my husband had 3 weeks paternity leave, which was a huge deal because in those 3 weeks, we were really figuring each other out again. And I think what I wish I had known was just how important those words were and just how, like, as a mom, I learned after having my baby how crazy my hormones were. And so, like, it helped looking back, like, oh, that's why I was the way I was when she was 3 weeks old. So, yeah, I think that would have been helpful.
I love that. I love that honesty. And I think that it's just super important also that you have, like, some folks that you can reach out to. Right? Like,
yeah.
you new parents, and even you not so new parents, Pastor Brian, just like who's, you know, on your team, who's on your board that you can, you know, call in an emergency and just be like, I can't explain anything, but get here and I'll be back in an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
So find totally. A team. So I'm curious from all three of you, how has becoming a parent impacted your relationship with God, your walk, your spirituality, your understanding? Like, how has this impacted you and God?
Yeah. It has been such a journey. I used to love my quiet times where I could journal and just sit with the Lord, hear him and pray and all of that. And as a new mom, time has just completely just escaped me. Mm. There really isn't a time. And I choose that. I choose that as a mom to have my baby with me, you know, majority of the time. And it's a blessing. But I think the biggest thing is that every day is sanctifying. My understanding of the Lord is that he is so kind and generous to us with the time that we are given on this earth. And I think watching this little person, this little pure, I mean, don't get me wrong, they're human, right? Mm. And they have their needs and, you know, sin nature is going to come up, right? We're going to see that. But I think just watching her look to me and need me shows me how I need to look to the Lord and need him as a parent and as someone who sustains me. So
that's a good word, Maddie. What about you, Kristen?
So I think one of the things, like, with my walk in faith and with the Lord has always been, you know, affirmation from the Lord. So, you know, anytime I feel like I'm in need of something, he always sends kind of a sign and an affirmation. And really the biggest affirmation that I've ever received is my daughter. That's just the truth. My husband and I had a very hard journey to parenthood. We tried for 6 years and we were told multiple times by multiple doctors that we would never have children. And you know, the Lord always provides and always gives you, you know, he knows the deepest desires of your heart. And, you know, whether that requires, you know, that amount of patience or whatever lesson that he's trying to bring you, you know, that's really what, you know, we've both gotten from our daughter. So, yeah.
I love that. I love that. And what about from you, Pastor Cliff?
Yeah. So I think the first thing that comes to mind when I hear that question is I look at my son on the regular, right? And I'm like, how could God give up his one and only son to die on the cross? Mm. Like, how could he do that? I've joked with HSM multiple times. I've been like, guys, I would not give up my son for you. I wouldn't. I love this kid too much. There's no way I'm going to sacrifice my kid so that you can live. Like, not going to happen. And it's incredible that we have a God who was willing to do that so that we could live in eternity with him. And so really the capacity of God's character to love is something that I've just continuing to learn and to understand, just be really grateful for. Yeah. And how God loved me so much. He loves my son so much, my wife so much, that he gave up his one and only son, like one and only. Like scripture says one and only. It doesn't say son. It says one and only. Yeah. I only have one son right now. Mm-hmm. I would not give him up, like I said. And so just, and even him giving me the capacity to, as I mentioned before, have grace for myself and for him and love in a way that I never thought was even possible. So yeah, God's definitely been throughout this whole process and been teaching me a lot of really, really cool stuff.
I just wanted to touch on a little bit. Kristen mentioned like difficulty in conceiving. And yeah. I think I've been through loss personally. And one of the things that like really changed my view of the Lord is his redemption.
Yes.
I really got to see redemption through my daughter being born. Mm. Just personally, my first child that I lost through miscarriage, I remember them by the name of Poppy, just because that was the size they were when I found out. Mm. And my daughter, Elia, is now born in August, and the birth flower for August is Poppy. Mm. And I just thought that was like a really sweet, personal thing that God is so personal in the details of redeeming and just bringing joy to the areas of deep sorrow. And there's nothing like being a parent and the love you have for your children. So,
That's
just
beautiful.
Wanted to share that.
There is something about the love of a parent that is pretty unique and I think is different even from romantic love or familial love or those types of things to, you know, Pastor Judah, you always tease me when you see the pictures of, you know, me with my boys in my office, like, oh, those are your kids, you know, because they do, they look like me. Or, or Cliff, you were just saying how Ford, his baby pictures look just like you.
Yep.
And I'm sure the two of you have seen the resemblance between either you or your husbands or whatever in your children. And to just go, oh my gosh. Like, and to then think, okay, the love that I feel for this child is God's love towards us. Mm-hmm. It's pretty extraordinary.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you all three of you for taking the time. Very aware that the time for new parents is extremely precious. So we appreciate you spending a little bit of that with us. We'll be right back. So, Pastor Judah, I referenced this in the open, but communication is something that we're all doing all of the time.
All the time.
And yet, many of us are not very good at it. And it's very easy to develop some bad habits in our communication that can alienate people, that can hurt feelings, that can impact us personally and professionally.
Yeah.
And it feels like a tough thing to work on because I think most of us think we're better at it than we are.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about in this segment a few kind of frequent barriers to excellent communication based somewhat on an article that you and I read. That, I don't know about you, but I felt personally attacked.
It hurt my feelings. I want to scrap this segment. Yeah. But
you
I
and
suppose
me both.
We ought to be transparent.
But onward we shall go. Mm. So what is the first kind of communication barrier that stuck out to you from the article?
Well, the author attacked me physically when he talked about being a frequent interrupter.
Mm.
And I certainly am and can be that. And, you know, it speaks to, I think, an even bigger issue of just not being present. But one of the things that he says is that in order to overcome the habit, we have to accept that not all of our ideas are going to get to be shared. And I thought, oh, wow, that's a really good way. But I actually have not thought about that. Like, I always go into conversations and say, what is the best way to get all of my ideas heard?
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, reframing it and saying, okay, what could I put on the chopping block?
Yeah.
What can I go in here, maybe even from kind of the outset, and say, if I only can communicate two things, what are my two things going to be?
Yeah.
And then to hold everything else loosely.
Well, and even in framing it that way, to even give consideration to the fact that if we're in a conversation, maybe the other person is coming with that mentality of like, they have a lot of things to say and they have a lot of things they want to get out, and to be able to go, okay, I want to create space for someone to kind of say their piece. And that's not an excuse to allow kind of endless talking,
right?
But to recognize in my interrupting, which I'm extremely prone to do, that that is communicating disrespect, that's making the conversation less enjoyable for the other person, and it's not accomplishing the good that I think it is, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. What about you?
Yeah, so for me, which by the way, I interrupted you once in that segment, but
how
I think we were both doing our best to try not to interrupt each other, which was you know, it's growth. So for me, distracted listening.
Mm.
And I am extremely guilty of this, and I've really invested a lot of effort in getting better. Obviously, there are innumerable things we can distract ourselves from at any given time. So I could listen to you while checking email. I could listen to you while doing something on my phone. I could listen to you while thinking about something else. And I mean, even my goodness, back when we were all on Zoom all the time, I had to make it a discipline to, all right, I'm going to be in this meeting, and I'm like, it's like I'm a suspect of a robbery or something. I'm going to keep my hands where people can see them so that they know I'm not, because I was terrible at it. It was like a given that if I'm on Zoom, I'm also doing something else.
A little solitaire.
Totally.
Candy Crush.
Well, and I think that we all get a little silly about this because we all justify it in ourselves, but we hate it from others.
100%.
Like I went all full old man on my boys the other night. We were driving home from church and we were talking and I was sharing with them a story, and my son's on his phone, my other son's on his Kindle, and okay, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, and I finally was like, all right, boys, when someone's talking to you, like, you know, you need to,
cut
if you're in the middle
devices.
Of something important, you can say, hey, hold on, wait a second, but you need to be able to in the, you know, a reasonable amount of time. So I don't know, man, my brain is going 100 miles an hour, diagnosed ADHD, everything else. I have had to learn, and I've so far to go in this, that like, listening to someone intently is really a gift that you give them. And
that's
always
right.
been something, Pastor
that's
Judah,
right.
that I've really admired about you. I watch your body language and everything else when you're really listening to somebody. Like, you do so many nonverbal things to show that you're all in with them when you're not playing Candy Crush.
Like, do I? Thank you, though.
Yeah, no, I think you do. So how about you? What are some ways for you that you would go, okay, this is maybe how I've tried to overcome the tendency toward distracted listening?
Yeah, I mean, I think one, getting rid of stuff that you know is a temptation, right? Like, just like not having, you know, if I know that there's a, for example, I will take a Zoom call and I'll like be on my couch and I'll just kind of toss my phone just outside of my reach, just enough where I can see it light up if something, but where I'd have to stretch and, because then it's just not as likely, and it doesn't just depend on my discipline, right? Yeah. If I don't particularly have the discipline in that moment. I think the other thing is I'm learning how much you can learn from listening.
Huh.
And I know that sounds obvious. Of course you can. But, you know, just paying attention, giving your ear to somebody, you can learn so much about what they need, about what they're dealing with. And biblically, right, Bible says everything comes out of the heart, right? What comes out of the mouth comes out of the heart. So I think that's also a real motivator now for me and how I listen.
Yeah, no, that's well said. How about you? What was your next one?
Well, probably what I just did. Rambling on and on. When someone turns a conversation that should have been, you know, a two-sided conversation into a monologue. And one of the things that it talks about in this particular article that we were reading is that it is okay to interrupt in this instance, that this is kind of the only instance where it's okay to say, you know, hey, I actually have to cut this conversation short. But for those of us who are ramblers, apparently we are not fun to listen to. And so I'm curious, one, if you consider yourself a rambler, which would be funny if you do, because I don't consider you a rambler, but two, what you feel like would be helpful in limiting that.
I am absolutely a rambler. And I think you and I interact in professional environments more. Mm. And I think I've done a better job in my professional life of say what needs to be said and be done.
Yeah.
But I think in my personal life, it's still very much a work in progress. But it's funny, Because I like to tell stories. I like to make people laugh. I enjoy sharing about my life or whatever. But I have learned the discipline of really watching the body language of people that I'm talking to, especially if I'm talking about something that I know might not be of much interest to them. And when I kind of see that, like, sit back in the chair, eyes maybe kind of a little more blank, you're like, all right, Kylie, wrap this up, you know? So, but I think, and that's, but it is something I've coached people in, is to go, okay, know what you're going to say. And then also, like, it really is helpful to know when you're done so that you can just be done. Because, and even if someone's going to share something publicly, if they're inexperienced, I require them to write their last sentence.
Yep.
You can speak first from an outline, but know your last sentence, because how often do we get to, like, well, and then anyways, so yeah, and it just kind of goes on forever. And much like listening is a gift, rambling is not a gift. So how about, I don't know, do you consider yourself a rambler?
Oh, 100%.
And what do you do about that?
100%. I'm a rambler. And one of the things that I have not began putting into practice, but that I was thinking about, is using the filter of, can I get my point across in, I don't know what period of time, maybe 1 minute, 30 seconds, a couple sentences, whatever. And if the answer is no, then I think maybe holding yourself accountable to, then that means that I need to work on whatever I was going to say. And using that as a way to just, like, limit how much you talk. The Bible says, be slow to speak and quick to hear.
Yeah.
And so I hope that would help. I think also when I just am more comfortable with a subject, I'm less likely to ramble.
Yeah. Well, and that's an interesting point, because I do think that, yes, those who are most clear in their thinking can be concise in their explanations,
right?
That you're right. I think we tend to maybe make up for a lack of confidence with more words or more, I don't want to say extreme is a little too extreme, ironically, of a word, but, like, you know, just kind of overly emotive language, and you just kind of go, okay, what am I covering up over here? I think something that has been sort of an oddity of my personality my entire life is I'm very sensitive to how what other people do makes me feel. Hmm. And then to go, I don't want to do that. I really hate the way it feels to be in the room with a yeller. So I'm not a yeller. Like, there are times when I want to yell, but I just, as a matter of conviction, pretty much never yell in anger. I've maybe done it once or twice in the last many years. Not because I'm some great person, but because I've seen the damage of it.
Yeah.
The experience of being around somebody who is using 200 words to say what should be said in 25, that's irritating.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
It is exhausting. So not that I'm perfect at it, but that has motivated me trying to get a little better in that area, because I don't want to do that to other people.
Yeah. And I mean, I think overall, there are, you know, several other things on the list, but I think overall, this article just was a reminder to me to work on my communication on the ground, right? I, as a person who communicates a lot on stage in multiple venues and in multiple ways, I think a lot about how to be thoughtful, strategic, authentic in that communication, and perhaps not enough on the ground. And I think all of us can just, you know, every so now and again, think about, you know, what do I want to do differently in the ways that I'm talking to folks.
No, absolutely. So check out the article. We covered three of them. There are five more. They're all worth taking a look at. And, you know, as with Pastor Judah and myself, you may find yourself a bit attacked, but it's good medicine.
Actually, what I want to say.
It's good medicine. We'll be right back.
So, Pastor Brian, on the internet, there's this meme that goes around that says, if Paul was alive today, the church in America would be getting a letter.
I've seen it.
And there's kind of this joke that we've made about how if, when we say that different folks mean different things. Like, what do we think that Paul would criticize about the church in America?
And sometimes we mean opposite things.
Correct.
I've already forgotten the thing about not interrupting. Go on.
Correct. And so we were reading this article from Christianity Today about the polarization of the church and of our country, and kind of some things to think about as believers. Pastor Brian, what are some things that kind of leapt out to you from that?
This is an extraordinary article that we're going to link in the show notes, and
I really
encourage you to read it.
Really good.
But I think, and the author does a great job of drawing on some of what Paul has to say in Romans 14 about the idea of the strong bearing with the weak. And something we have to recognize is, and the founders of America like knew this, that on some level, American ideals require people of character or they don't work.
Or they don't work.
People who lack character and are obsessed with personal freedom will create moral, spiritual, and every other kind of chaos, right?
Yeah,
that we have to be people of character if even the American project is going to work. How much more so is important for us to recognize that as Christians, we're actually called to a very different, even higher ethic than that. It's one thing to say, okay, I want to be a person of character so that I can emulate the values of America, things like personal freedom, things like equal treatment under the law, and so on and so forth. It's another thing to say, how do I live out my calling as a Christ follower when what Jesus actually calls us to is sacrificial love.
What
Jesus calls us to is where I am in a position of strength, I want to use that strength not to leverage additional benefit for myself, but to actually bear with those who are experiencing some kind of weakness. And what it ultimately is, it is a voluntary surrendering of preference for the sake of another. And this is where I think there is a very significant clash between kind of secular American values and Christian values, because you go, okay, well, no, I'm free to do whatever I want. Well, and even Paul talks about, yes, you're free, but don't use your freedom as an excuse for sin. I'm free to do whatever I want, and I don't want the government telling me what to do, which is all well and good. But as Christ followers, we are actually called to surrender our preferences for the sake of our brothers and sisters. That is a difficult thing to do for anybody, and I think we as Americans are not very good at it because it's not what we are trained in. What do you think?
100%. And not only that, but I think that even some of us who probably think that we are better at this, right?
Yeah.
I remember when I was in college, I had to take a course about multiculturalism, and we had to basically do this assessment to see how good we were at being multiculturalists. And I scored really bad. And I think that a part of what happens is that we're taught that the answer to that issue is to be more tolerable, right?
Yeah.
Toleration. And the author of the article says that that's actually like not what the goal is, right? Yeah. And he essentially says that toleration at best is a temporary solution until we can get to full reconciliation.
Yeah.
And I just thought, okay, so maybe you're good at being tolerant, right? And often, I don't know, that may even be performative, right?
Hmm.
And not like authentic.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that you may be in the kind of the public space and know how to behave and how to filter yourself in a way that is palatable and kind of genuinely accepted. But when you go home at your kitchen table, you know, kind of where is your heart? Where are your words? What are you consuming? What are you investing in? Right. And that what happens there may not reflect the same thing that happens kind of when you're at the grocery store.
And so I
think that for me, understanding that's not being tolerant is not the goal,
right?
But being reconciled is the goal is, just, it was profound to me.
Yeah. And the work that the article does, again, around Romans 14 and this kind of weak, strong parallel about how Paul addressed the issue of dietary, not just preferences, but kind of dietary practices within the early church, and how it was this continual, again, emphasis on, if you are strong, sacrifice your freedom for the sake of those who are weak. And later in the article, it's very interesting what the author does, is kind of contrasts the work of John Stuart Mill, who I read a lot in my poli-sci classes in college, who talks about this idea that freedom in a democratic society is personal autonomy. In other words, unless I am harming you or harming your property, I am generally free to do whatever I want as I see fit. That is kind of the standard definition of freedom that I think has kind of leaked into sort of the American ethos. But Paul's definition of freedom, the author states, is radically different. And I'm going to quote the author directly. We are to be free from the enslaving power of sin, and its end result is not personal autonomy, but righteousness. Mm. The choice, as Paul sees it, is not between slavery and freedom, but between two different kinds of slavery. And that is a profound end quote, by the way. That is a profound idea to say, actually, I can be enslaved to my idea of freedom. Mm. And if I am valuing my personal freedom to the point where I say I am harming you by my expression of freedom, like something has gone terribly wrong there, certainly from a Christian perspective.
Yeah, there's a, I've talked about this before in the pulpit, there's a South African term called Ubuntu, which means I am because we are. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is one of the things that really sets the United States apart from a lot of other countries. And one of the ways that I think I wish we were like other countries is that they think so much about the community, about what's good for the community. And I know that the complicated thing about that is that here, some of us would argue that, well, I'm thinking about the community too, and that's why I'm so, you know, aggressive in my views. But I think what I see from other countries is that they are okay with putting down power, sharing power with other folks for the sake of equity. And I think that we can and should and hopefully will get better at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was reflecting on this the other day, because I think it's important to recognize that a lot of kind of the excesses we see in our world today, where it's folks maybe overvaluing freedom, as I might say, is I think that freedom becomes this default because we don't have a compelling vision of something better. Yeah. So for example, I was walking home the other day with my son from his basketball game. We live in the same neighborhood as our school. And out in plain view, on a road my kids walk home from school on, somebody has displayed a flag that literally says, F your feelings. And the F word was spelled out. There was some other material on that flag as well, but that was kind of the key thing. And I thought, what, like, this person 100% has the right to do that. If we're going to talk about rights, I will absolutely defend their right to put an obscenity on a flag in their yard. But I think, gosh, how... I want to talk to that person and like truly understand like what is going on here that we have been so kind of radicalized and individualized that I might say to my neighbors, F your feelings. Yeah. And that is to me the logical end to an overvaluing of personal freedom. So now you come into church and I'm concerned with my preferences. I'm concerned with my beliefs. You better think the way that I do. I'm not in a learning posture. I'm not in a welcoming posture. Man, I'm getting all fired up about this. I'm so irritated by this flag.
I'm going to press the gas.
Right?
Talk about it, sir.
But and again, and I want to make this other point clear as well, and then I'm done, is when I see something like that in some random neighbor who I don't know, it's a quarter mile from my house, I want to look at myself and go, hey, I'm not putting F-word flags up in my yard.
Hope not.
But where am I overvaluing personal freedom? And where am I unwilling to submit my personal freedom in a way that might bring blessing to someone else? Because that ultimately, number one, is what God calls us to. And number two, like, our greatest joy, I believe, is found in that level of service to one another, that Ubuntu concept you named. And man, there's such an antidote to polarization when we go, okay, our primary motive is love, our primary motive is welcome, and we're going to be different, but love and welcome carry the day.
Yeah, and I think that we can be honest about the fact that, like, this whole concept of kind of creating an antidote to polarization is not a quick, easy one. We're not oversimplifying and saying it's just kumbaya and everything's going to be okay. But I think even just understanding that each of us, whatever it is that we believe, right, we believe it as hard as what they believe
totally
on the other side, right? Like, the reason that we would say, like, yo, like, I'm a Christian is because, like, yo, like, I know Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, I know that man. That's a real, real person, you know, in my life. And as much as I believe that, over on the other side of wherever, you know, whoever they call God, they believe that that person is real. And so that creates the space for like some real compassion.
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, I don't care what you say. You're not going to convince me that Jesus is not Lord, yeah. right? And it may be just that difficult on the other side and of whatever other ideas we're talking about. And then it's like, okay, I get why you are on 10 or why you are so intense yeah. about this. But also, calm down.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah. I do think starting from that compassion place is is important with flag person or anybody else, right?
I think I'm curious if you can, what opportunities there may be to like engage with your neighbor.
Yeah. No, and it is. It's like one thing if they were next door. It's not like, I walk or run by their house, and unfortunately, my neighborhood is not one where a ton of people are out front. On my little street, there is, but in other places, there's not. So I don't know. Certainly, if the opportunity presents itself, would love to just ask some questions. And not obviously, I'm not going to be like, hey, why do you have that flag up? But I do think that flag is in many ways, and man, we encounter these all the time, that in some ways, it's a little bit of a cry for help. Of like, I want to be seen, I want to be heard, I want to be known. Yeah. And even to give that individual space to share about themselves to me and to listen as non-judgmentally as me in my fallen state can, I think that's ultimately the first step when we see some of that.
You know, the value of that is that it's going to be a nice boundary for you in terms of not making him a caricature, him or her.
Totally, which is easy to do.
Which is what happens, I think, a lot is, right, like we say them over there and we paint with these broad brush strokes. I know I'm guilty of this where I'm like, all of them are A, B, C, and D.
Totally.
And actually it tends to be more nuanced and more, you know, complex, and we need to hold space for that.
I was speaking at a church several years ago, and there was a gentleman who came dressed in what I would describe as pretty inflammatory clothing in terms of the message he was advocating for, which again, 100% defend his right to do that.
What's going on, Lincoln? There's a lot of stuff going on out there in Lincoln. Lincoln is hot.
This was not in Lincoln, actually, but I 100% defend his right to do it, but really question the wisdom of it. And in my mind, I started going into caricature mode, mm-hmm. right? Oh, this person's this person's that, this person's the other. The way this church worked is it was a smaller church, and as the preaching pastor for the day, they wanted me to say, hey, if you need prayer for something, come on up front after the service, and I'd be happy to pray for you, which of course I'm glad to do. And this guy comes up. He was super nice. Mm. He was asking for prayer to be a better husband, better father, better this. I'm like, he's quite a bit older than I was, but I felt this sense of kind of unity with him in that moment. And I felt like, I think God brought him to me because he needed prayer, and God also brought him to me because I needed an attitude adjustment to be like, hey man, let's stop judging people by these things and instead lead with compassion and try
curiosity.
To avoid that character. Yeah,
you know, who are you? Even because the more you disagree with somebody, actually, the more curious you should be.
Totally.
Because I am curious. How do you get to this idea? Like, seriously, how do you get, like, how do you get there? And then thinking also about, okay, just as strategy, right? Because we do want to convince people, at least to follow Jesus, right?
Yeah.
To think about, what would I need in order to get from A to B?
Yeah.
Right? What would I need to hear? How could I navigate this in a way, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that all the way around, it'll just be helpful.
Yep. Well said. Good stuff. All right. Hey, read the article and we'll be right back.
And be nice.
So for our game, we are, first of all, bringing back our esteemed guests, and second, bringing back one of my favorite games we do on this podcast called I Know You're Lying, where I will name a category, and two contestants will go back and forth saying how many items from that category they can name. When one person thinks the other is lying or cannot name anymore, they will say, I know you're lying, and then we will find out. I'll go with category number one, and then Pastor Judah will go, and we'll just see. We might go beyond that. But first victims are Maddie and Kristen, and the category is, are we ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Brands of children's toys.
Oh.
Keeping with the child theme, brands of children's toys. Kristen, opening bid.
I think I can name four.
She can name four.
Four? Probably. I think you're lying.
Okay, we're quick. All right, Kristen, give us four.
I just gave it away too. Children's toys, like brands or like an actual toy?
Not an elk. Come on, we can't do actual toy. We need brands.
Okay, brands.
Please answer the questions.
Yeah. I know. I don't have any. Stalling. I can't name any. I also didn't really sleep that great.
Hashtag mom brain.
Yeah, mom. Exactly. Exactly. You're getting us all on like deprived sleep.
Yeah,
like,
really, this game really is not game. Fair. We should be having you guys make the categories for us. Come on. But it's our podcast, so that's not what we're going to do. All right.
Sorry.
Pastor Judah, hit us with the second category, which will be for Maddie and Cliff.
All right. Your next category is types of self-care.
Types of self-care. Maddie, you go first.
I can name three.
Three, huh? Yeah, I could probably do four.
Four?
Yeah.
I could do five.
You could do five?
Yeah.
I could do six.
Six? All right. I'll do seven.
Uh-huh.
I think you're lying.
Well.
All right.
Here we go.
Taking a walk.
Yes.
Journaling.
Yeah.
A bath. You know, having a conversation with a good friend, that can be self-care as a new parent.
100%. Yeah, that's good.
Enjoying a meal, sitting down at a table by yourself. That's new self-care for me.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
She's going to be like taking a breath and like, well, actually breathing is really, really good for your mental health. But
maybe a couple
like,
more.
Painting your nails, that's kind of fun, girly thing to do.
What?
Self-care.
I guess I should try that.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. It's a new trend, actually.
Hot pink. Go for it.
Ooh, I'm in.
Two more? I need one more. Self-care.
Come on, Maddie.
Listening to a podcast to develop your brain.
We'll take it.
Yeah.
Great job, Maddie.
100%.
Great job.
All right, since Maddie has proven that she is unbeatable in this game, our last round will be with Cliff and Kristen. And Cliff and Kristen, your category is suburbs of Sacramento.
My gosh.
Suburbs of Sacramento.
Suburbs of Sacramento. Okay.
Like cities?
You know, suburbs. Yeah.
We need clarification.
So suburb is defined as it is its own municipality with like a mayor and everything.
Okay, yes, cities. Yeah. Okay. I don't know why you just said yes.
Yeah.
So
all right. So
yeah, you could have just said yes.
Cliff, we'll start with you. I'd like to be clear.
I can do three.
I could do four.
That was quick.
It was very quick. She looks very confident.
She looks
this is a podcast, but
confident.
Her face is like, I am very confident.
She
in this.
Is going to take you.
You said
down
four?
Here.
I could do four.
I could do five.
Okay. I could probably do six.
Could you, though?
I think I might be able to. This one I'm going to do well.
Interesting. Okay. Six. Let me think. Roseville.
We're bidding, not naming, Pastor Cliff.
I could do seven.
You're lying.
Okay. All right.
I probably
am. The gauntlet has been thrown.
I probably am.
Is it
seven?
Okay. Here we go. Seven. Roseville. Lincoln.
The city we're currently in.
Citrus Heights.
Citrus Heights doesn't have a mayor.
It is a city though. It became a city.
They do have a mayor. Yeah. They do have a mayor.
Auburn.
We don't have fact checkers on this podcast. So
yeah.
We're just going to go
for it.
Let's
just go for it. I've got to do seven.
Seven.
So. You're at four.
All right. I've got four. Okay. My goodness. I go to multiple cities all the time. Okay. Being put on the spot is awesome.
That is kind of the fun of the game.
I already said Auburn. Loomis, Penryn, Newcastle.
Oh, just
got it.
Wow.
Sneaks it in.
Yes.
Under the wire.
That's impressive.
Well done. You know what? Let's do one more round and one of our guests can come up with a category.
Pastor for you Judah, guys?
For you and I. Let's do that. So I've seen you all guests commiserating, so I know this is coming from all of you. Maddie, what is our category?
Yes, we've all agreed that you guys should name cosmetic product brands.
Cosmetic product brands.
Like brand names of cosmetic products. Yes.
Start us off, Pastor Judah.
I can name one.
I can name three.
Wow.
Come
on.
I can name four.
I can name five.
Whoa.
I know you lying.
Mary Kay, MAC.
Yep.
L'Oreal.
Okay.
I didn't know L'Oreal made makeup.
Does Dove count?
No.
No.
It's not a cosmetic.
Maybelline?
Yes.
And,
come on.
Oh my gosh.
It's
oh
the
my
store. God. They got the store one. Start with an S.
Sears. I'm just kidding.
No. Oh,
Sephora.
Yes.
Hey, hey. With a little assist from my competitor.
Just a disclaimer, please do not go to Sears looking for makeup. I just don't
or
think.
For makeup you're going to give as a gift. Yeah, I don't think Sears exists anymore. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you again for our guests for being with us. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time on Engaging Culture. Bye-bye.